morning, everybody. Today is Friday, February 10th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everyone. It is a nippy 18 degrees and very overcast. And looks like we got a little bit of snow here in upstate New York. But a shout out to JJ. I just saw those pictures off to the east of us where that storm is hitting. And it looks like mid-state New York got quite a dumping of snow. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show AI, NASA, Longevity, Augmentation, Musk's Neural Lace, and Zuckerberg. We talked about all kinds of different craziness that revolved around longevity medicine and some of the discoveries now they're making with the two twin brothers who happen to be in NASA. They're saying that being outside our inner atmosphere, they're never outside the outer atmosphere, but outside the inner atmosphere, it appears that going into quote-unquote space causes some beneficial things to happen to your telomeres. Now, we know that a lot of these tech billionaires have been spending bazillions of dollars on longevity medicine and finding ways to live forever. The new thing, the new moneymaker, if you are rich and famous, to find out how to quote unquote cure all disease. You know, there's a lot of them working on that right now from many different perspectives. But it all comes back to the singularity, being able to utilize technology to thwart Mother Nature. So maybe we can live to be a ripe old age of 674. We found right at the end of the show yesterday, Mark Zuckerberg and his wife Priscilla Chan dedicated $3 billion, I believe, to this new initiative. And they are hiring 47 doctors, just like Google now has their Verily division. We've talked about good old Tommy Insel, former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, leaving the feds and going to work for Google, all in the name of curing mental disorders. Well, they're rolling out all the stops now. We got Zuckerberg on board with his own longevity medicine initiative, hiring 50, almost 50 scientists to cure all diseases. Now, here's the interesting thing. All in the name of living forever, curing all disease, becoming immortal. The people who control these technologies will be the people who control everything. And we have this medical technological control structure that's being dropped upon us. Now, we looked yesterday, we were looking at some artificial intelligence and some of the things that have been going on lately. And now that my 22 tabs have just recovered and 27 minutes later, my browser finally rebooted. I didn't mention that. I've been biting my nails here. We might be able to cover some of those today. But anyway, let's leave off where we ended yesterday. Let's start back where we ended yesterday. Don't mind me. Two cups of coffee. I'm still kind of not with it yet. Mark Zuckerberg is now paying nearly 50 scientists as a part of his plan to cure all disease. And can I just tell you, every time I see pictures of him with that smile on his face, and it's just unbelievable. He just always looks like he's got a shit-eaten grin. Maybe I can find it and drop it in the chat. But I mean, this is probably the happiest of all stories we're going to cover today. Here, put this into chat. Put this into chat. Chat, chat. I sing like that to my cats. All right. Anyway, so Zuckerberg has a wildly ambitious plan to treat and cure all disease, and he has made a step forward with an announcement that they are funding dozens of scientists over the next 5 years. The Chan Zuckerberg Initiative is an organization run by Facebook co-founder and his wife, pediatrician Priscilla Chan, launched with a $3 billion checkbook in September. Its aim is to help, quote unquote, cure all disease by the end of the 21st century, with a focus on investing in long-term scientific research that might not necessarily pay off right away. Of course not, but in the future, it'll control everything. Part of the CZI, that is the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, is the Chan Zuckerberg Biohub, a medical research organization. And on Wednesday, the Biohub announced that it is now providing $50 million in funding to researchers. The cash is going to 47 different people to fund their research for the next 5 years with up to $1.5 million each. And the investigators are to be looking into a range of areas from imaging cells to developing biochip technologies to studying the transmission of malaria. Of course, that's Billy Gates' favorite. The Chan Zuckerberg Biohub is partnering with three universities. What did we just find yesterday? Oh, God, my brain is still so fuzzy because I got this, whatever, this plague I've had. But we read something yesterday where there were, for the twin study, 10 universities or 12 universities involved studying the two twins, one that spent a lot of time in space and one that did not. Well, I guess now we got three universities, Berkeley, University of California, I'm not sure what UCF is, University of California F. I don't know. One of the University of California's, Berkeley and Stanford, our three university partners, provide the very backbone of our BioHub's work, says the organization. And our investigators come from these outstanding research institutions, and their faculty will be an integral part of our day-to-day operations here at BioHub. As BioHub grows, Zuckerberg's going to get even richer, and it will also look to work with other research institutions. Both Mark and Priscilla are avid consumers of science, says BioHub co-president and UCSF. Oh, there you go. So it was a typo. San Francisco. Professor Joseph DeRizzi to BuzzFeed. They enjoy learning new things and knowing what the cutting edge research is all about. Yeah, well, don't we all? I don't know. That's kind of the way I live my life. Which that made me a bazillionaire. We are conducting research that helps us solve big health problems, and we find and support the best and the brightest biologists, scientists, engineers, and technologists. Our culture emphasizes intellectual freedom and collaboration, and we will provide our team with the best scientific tools. And when the right tools don't exist, well, guess what, Johnny? We'll just invent them. And that's the way it goes. We will just invent them. And you know, I just saw, speaking of BioHub, we've been talking about brain implants. We hit up an old story about Kurzweil 2030. We're going to have nanobots in our neocortex so we can connect direct to the Internet of Everything. And they were also, we had another story too, where they were discussing connecting us to the machine mentally. Oh, I ran across an MIT story, a technology now that could finally make brain implants practical. Now we know DARPA. DARPA's been messing around with this for a very long time. Then, of course, they had to normalize brain implants by doing live brain surgery on National Geographic last year. Well, now we're going to start rolling out the consumer products for basic things. They had one that was for Parkinson's. Of course, they're going to have another for PTSD. Well, this one is to restore vision. This technology can finally make brain implants practical, baby steps. Harvard Medical School is testing a new design of a brain implant meant to restore vision to the blind. This is from February 9th, 2017. In lab testing, how brain implants could help people with physical disabilities. Tales of sweet of success can be bittersweet. And experiments like those that let paralyzed people sweat coffee using a robotic arm or let blind people see spots of light have proven huge potential of computers that interface with the brain. And remember, where a lot of this research started in DARPA was to help fix injured soldiers from the battlefield, ones that had, you know, missing limbs or traumatic brain injury. And DARPA used them as a captive audience because, of course, they had the money and they had the technology. We can rebuild him. It was kind of like the $6 million man. Remember that show? Lee Rogers. That's exactly what they were doing. And these poor soldiers, these former soldiers, most of them, then became unwitting guinea pigs. And it's been that way for generations. You know, when you're in there, they have carte blanche. When you're in the VA system, you're at their mercy. And they're going to tell you it's going to be to help you. But don't forget, as they are helping you with these new discoveries, you are their new monkey to utilize as the research lab rat. All right, so, but it is a wonderful thing. They have all kinds of new prostheses now that are brain controlled and exoskeletons to help paralyzed individuals. They now are working on these chips to allow the blind to see. But the implanted electrodes used in such trials eventually become useless because scar tissue forms and degrades the electrical connection to the brain cells. Well, next month, and this would be in March of 2017, tests will begin in monkeys. So these will be new monkeys of a new implant for piping data. And I think we'd been reading about this high bandwidth connection. I'm sorry, guys. There'll be a new implant for piping data into the brain that is designed to avoid the scar tissue problem. I also read there is some HD connectivity coming as well. Right now, we are using like the equivalent of old school pixelated connections, like a serial port, and we're going to be going to like HDMI here soon. The project is intended to lead to devices that can restore vision to blind people long term. Researchers at Harvard Medical School will use a new kind of implant that will go beneath the skull, but it can rest on the surface of the brain instead of penetrating inside of the organ. And I'm going to say in the future, like, they're not even going to need to put something inside of your brain. I mean, technology is getting to the point with these fMRIs and being able to read your emotions and read your neural patterns and that I don't think they're going to have to implant under or in the skull in the next 5 years even. As these progress, I think that they'll definitely be able to just put a little headset on and read what's going on in there and talk to it. An array of microscopic coils inside of hair-like devices can generate powerful, highly targeted magnetic fields to induce electrical activity at particular locations in the brain tissue underneath. And this implant will also be tested when placed inside of the brain tissue. And yeah, because, you know, they want to be able to experiment some more. The device will be used to stimulate the visual cortex to try to recreate the activity normally triggered by signals from the eyes, creating the sensation of sight without the eye's input. Ultimately, the goal is to use the implant to convert signals from a camera into brain activity. Now, I'm going to tell you why this caught my attention. Because we had read a bunch of stories about high-definition virtual reality and some of the stuff that they are working on right now. We have this terahertz 5G connectivity that is coming here very soon. I had a story about that yesterday and a story about terahertz where they want to beam HD VR to the ground. And we read an article about how easy it would be to be able to block your sensory input from your eyes of what is going on around you and connect. And I think this was a story out of something by Kurzweil, and connect these VR goggles so you would be real-time immersed. Once it took over your sensory perception, you literally would be in the simulation. Well, think about this. Listen to what they are talking about here for these new implants to, of course, help quote-unquote cure the blind. Or how about future technology hijack your vision and direct the signals to some sort of external device, like, oh, in this case, a camera. Or how about VR goggles? Guys, I'm telling you, there's always an ulterior motive. And I know that they are already working on that full immersion and how to easily, I think in Kurzweil's document, he was talking, of course, about nanobots, because Kurzweil just loves those damn nanobots, and they're working on them at Google's Verily division. But, you know, how long is it going to be? And, you know, here's the thing. Once our eyes can be turned off and we could just be bloop, redirected, it would be like being on Delta Airlines, one of those newfangled jets where every seat back has a nice big LCD embedded and you got your choice of 20,000 movies to watch while you're flying. I'm going to tell you what, first hour of the flight, I tried to sleep, didn't work. Second hour of the flight, I whipped out my phone and I got just a couple game applications on my phone. And one happens to be a really nice kick-ass game of Scrabble. So I opened my Scrabble and I played against my partner, Russ Bucket. That's what I call the computer. And Russ Bucket was pissing me off because he keeps making up words that aren't even in any English dictionary. I'm not even sure where he's getting these words from. So he turned off Russ Bucket and I saw the guy next to me happened to be watching a movie in his CPAC, and I was like, hey, is there anything good on there? And he's like, yeah, actually, there's some good stuff. So I zip through, zip, 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 zip. And I see that there's a brand new Jason Bourne movie. He's like, oh, I haven't seen that one yet. That just came out not too long ago. And it, by the way, I don't know what you guys think about Matt Damon or anything or his politics. I don't really pay attention to that because I got to tell you, if you've ever, never, ever seen those Bourne movies, you should. And that movie, again, talking about giving away the store with the technology that they have to track him, bag, tag, and track, I'm going to guarantee you that they have that already where they can track him anywhere, bzz, 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 zooming in down from a satellite to the CCTV to being able to dial into the room on the phone and see what's going on there. Guys, it was pretty insane. They could track him everywhere all over the planet. Every second he logged in or popped back up on the grid, they would find him. But my point in that is that movie screen, and this is still just an external screen. Think about when there are these HD goggles that you could wear 24/7 and have all these great sensations just with this external screen about a foot or two away from my face. I put on a Jason Bourne movie while I was flying at 36,000 feet, and I really hate flying. And the next 2 hours went poof. I had no idea I was in a plane. I had no idea that I was squished in a seat or that I was so tired because I was sucked into the machine. You know, it's not going to be too much longer, that dangling carrot. If you remember, even Zuckerberg was going after those VR goggles. That was like one of the biggies. That whole room of engineers in that picture of him walking in to announce whatever they were, Oculus something. And they are all just sitting there with their mouths open, staring at who the hell knows what. We saw in the future, they're going to have all kinds of VR porn. I mean, talk about a dangling carrot to suck the lemming masses right off the cliff. With little twanky porno music, bong, bong, right off the cliff. I mean, this is going to happen, people. And that is, as they are learning more and more how to hijack our five senses, we need to be more and more vigilant as to what is going on around us. Because as we are becoming highly distracted, and obviously there are some of us that it is not completely working on, she can see. She's not staring at her device 24/7 and running off on erroneous arguments, wasting her brain power. No! She's sitting here researching the meningitis vaccine that they've now made mandatory in New York State and looking at all the corruption behind it getting approved. I was last night. I'm going to have a big battle on my hands here this next school year. So I am trying to line up some torpedoes that I can shoot back and figure out a game plan here. But, you know, as they are hijacking our environments and our realities, and then they are rolling out all this new medical technology. Of course, it's going to be so amazing. It's going to cure Nana. It's going to make you live forever. Be careful what they are offering you. It is the poison apple. You know, great. Maybe some people live forever, but it's not going to be you, Johnny. This isn't all about Johnny. This is about the rich mother who's paying for it all in his progeny. Not about you. Maybe you could go to Mars and see if you get squished by their extra squishy Martian atmosphere and then try to come back and find out you're all kinds of screwed up. But hey, now you'll be another test subject like the NASA brothers. I don't remember their name, Mark Kelly and his brother. You'll be another NASA research subject and go in the human experimentation division and it'll be all happy. Guys, this is just really scary where we are. We got this brain project, of course, that is all about trying to image and recreate the human brain to be able to treat diseases. We have good old Tommy Insel working on diagnosing and curing mental disease from your voice patterns on a smartphone and diagnosing mental illness on a spectrum. You know, at some point, the brain has become the central focal piece to all of this. And it's because he who controls the brain wins. And we know that. It's been a psyop. But for all these years, they could play psychological games with us. But oh, goodness. In the public eye, human experimentation was banned by different treaties that happened over the years with different wars and whatever. Human experimentation was not allowed, but all in the name of medicine, all in the name of curing you and keeping you safe. Somehow in 2016, human experimentation has now become acceptable. Look out and careful what you ask for. That means DNA switch flipping injections as vaccines, gene therapies, CRISPR in the TARDIS, and zippity-zap in the brain, all in the name to improve you. We have augmentation coming. Because, of course, those damn Chinese, are getting way ahead of the curve. Little Johnny, you want to compete in a global market. you're going to have to be augmented. I mean, that literally is the world that we are coming to. And the people who control those strings are the people who control everything. Ultimately, anyway, back to this brain implant. Magnetic fields are not impeded by tissue forming around this new implant. And so these new ones might actually be pretty awesome compared to the old ones. This 3-year project is supported by a multi-million dollar grant under what? Oh, the Brain Initiative, created by Obama to improve scientists' understanding of how the brain works. Yeah, notice they don't say to cure all brain diseases. No, just to understand how the brain works. And at the end of this whole experiment, we hope to have monkeys to be able to navigate a maze just by perceiving light and dark or basic geometric patterns. Well, that's lovely. So we're going to have nice practical brain implants, again, all in the name. This time in curing blindness, which sounds to me like it is light and dark vision. But hey, brain tech, this is per Singularity Hub. The brain tech to merge humans and AI is already being developed. Now, we read about Elon Musk's neural lace yesterday. Elon Musk seems to think that if you can't beat him, join him. He said eventually we are going to become all but pets or just exterminated. But we'll become AI pets someday, maybe the smartest or the cutest of us. The rest of us will be put in cages or turned into food, who knows? But if we want to compete with AI, our super intelligent future overlords, we're going to have to augment ourselves. And Musk seems to think that this neural lace mesh stuff that would grow with your brain and connect it to the machine might be a way for us to co-develop with these new life forms that we are in the process of creating. And yes, they are life forms. I've had a very long few discussions with a friend of mine about what actually entails being alive. At least in my definition, I would say being alive is to be self-aware. To be aware of your surroundings and to know your place in the universe, to be able to experience and interact with those things, people, places around you. Well, as we start giving computers, whether they be Tin Can AI or software AI, 5 senses, such as robot googly eyes, right? That's i.e. a camera. Robot ears, which would be a microphone. Robot taste and smell, which would be some of these biosensors. Robot touch, well, we already got these prosthetic devices. And we got robot skin. Robot blood, robot organs. I mean, they've been building. I remember the name of that one robot, but they had that one robot that sweated. And he had like all the main organ systems inside of him. You know, as they're getting more and more sophisticated, and we give them more and more capabilities, and they get 5+ senses, because remember, they'll be able to have X-ray vision, infrared, and all this other stuff way better than we can. The flip of a switch or an update of the software is all it's going to take. They tend to become self-aware. They can see and hear and interact, and they even have a GPS so they know their actual location in the physical universe. I would call that almost being alive. Now, we can go all the way to, like, whether or not it has a soul, and I don't think we're going to go there. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about a definition of being alive. Being able to interact, to make things happen, to change the timeline to shoot a cue ball, to flick a bumblebee, to make things change in the timeline, to know where you are and what you are doing. Well, I would think that we are almost there with robotics. And as we make these systems smarter and smarter, we've already found three instances over the last month or so where Google's AI has done things on its own, learned things on its own, figured things out on its own without our intervention whatsoever. We should be highly frightened. Now, I don't know. I sent myself a story this morning, and I just, honestly, all three of my machines were having a big-ass crash up. Oh, here we go. It did send. It's just nothing is alerting me now that I even have messages. And I think I'll tell you why. I saw a story. Well, I was gone last week. We're going to try to get this to open. Nothing is working for me. Oh, God, it's one of those days. And my chest is, like, all tickly. Oh, all right, hold on. Let me open this. Oh, I'm starting to lose my ability to fight. I start to feel like crawling back into bed when I'm sick. It's just so much of a challenge. The whole morning's been a challenge. All right. So as we're talking about these machines becoming thinking self-aware entities, you got to be afraid. Because we have real smarty pants out there like Elon Musk and Ray Kurzweil. Like seriously 100% talking about merging with the machine. Having technologies developed that they're all excited about to help us merge with the machine. We got the director of DARPA, outgoing Ashka Burke, do whatever her name is. And maybe we'll listen to her lecture one of these days. But she is over the talking about the new whole entire DARPA portfolio of all the different things that they, and this is like everything we've talked about, all these different things now that they are rolling out and how exciting they are. And look at how we are literally, and this is the DARPA lady, merging with the machine. I mean, people, it's happening. This isn't fantasy. This isn't me. I know sometimes I totally sound like a lunatic. My family still thinks so. My husband gives me that eyebrow all the time. Like, don't talk about this in front of the kid because you sound crazy. But you know what? It's not crazy. We have the brightest minds in technology and in the Department of Defense and in the tech industry who are all talking about this happening right now and the research that is rolling out in the lab. So it is for real. But as we have this merging of man and the machine, and this is the literal singularity they've talked about for 20 some odd years or more, it really is coming. Don't forget, there is a step beyond the singularity. Singularity, at least for me, and my definition, is a physical merging of humans and technology, connecting us 24/7. It would be Kurzweil's nanobots connected to your neocortex so you could, with a blink of an eye and a wiggle of a nose, access the cloud inside your head in the, you know, digital sky somewhere. That would be the definition of the singularity, to make you a superhuman, super thinking. And as we get our little chippy implants of superhuman strength, it will be exactly like the bionic man. But there is this other singularity. And this is the singularity that scares me even more than brain implants. Oh, and even more than nanobots in my blood. Because I used to have dreams about this singularity when I was knee-high to a grasshopper over and over and over again. And that's the autonomy that is going to happen once they let the software AI go into the machine and it becomes Skynet. Now, we saw last summer at the Black, I think it was the Black Hat. It was Black Hat or the DEF CON. I think maybe it was the DEF CON conference in Vegas. They have it every year. It's typically hackers show up. Anybody who's kind of underground, smarty pants programmer who could hack their way around anything. And you have Keith Alexander, NSA shows up, and CIA shows up, and DOD shows up. They all show up because these are the guys they want. These are the guys that end up on Cyber Patrol. You know, living in mommy's basement can be quite profitable if you go to Vegas. And at that conference, of course, they have lots of universities there too. They had this Cyber Grand Challenge. They had a lot of universities competing using DARPA's 7 supercomputers as the back ends. And they were, I don't know if they were actually given code or if they were just given the hardware to run their own self-aware application, but they were tasked with trying to write software that'll go out, search, and destroy. They wanted someone to write them a piece of software because, oh my God, hackers under every bed trying to get into every computer system over the last few years, wink. We're so vulnerable. So we need to have a piece of software that can go search all vulnerabilities on all computer systems and to be able to keep this whole Internet of Everything that is coming, this Internet of Things and Internet of Everything that includes us at some point in the future, safe from hackers as well. It's got to have to find holes, bag tag and patch it without any human intervention. And if we're getting hacked, well, launch an attack without us even having to do anything. And that was what this mayhem software was all about. So Carnegie Mellon University's team happened to win that. Carnegie Mellon is where there's a lot of research going on into AI. Carnegie Mellon is where Obama gave one of his big outgoing speeches to the nation, saying about how AI is going to transform the future of our country. And any future leaders of this country are going to have to learn to deal with it. It's going to be our reality. Well, I read this when I was gone. This came out about a week ago, a week today. I'd always warned that this mayhem software now that they developed as part of this grand cyber challenge last summer that is thinking, repairing software for the Internet of Everything to be able to protect us and be a perimeter bot, Skynet running in the system, that the day they let that go, the day they let that genie out of the bottle, the world is going to change, because that literally will be Skynet being set free. Well, guys, I was kind of distracted because I was enjoying my birthday week and I was hanging out with my friend, but I had this queued up on my notebook. I totally forgot about it. And as I was cleaning up my tabs last night, because of course everything is so tabbed out that none of my machines will even open another thing, I ran across it again and I'm like, oh, I forgot to share this. And oh, this is bad. February 3rd, 2017. This happened without much fanfare, and you knew that's how it was going to happen. DARPA prize-winning bot Mayhem, and this was Mayhem, Cyber Grand Challenge, self-scanning, self-repairing, self-attacking, and I mean self without human intervention. Protection on the internet has been deployed. Ding. Been deployed to seek flaws and shut out botnets. Now, what? Oh, yes, I guess they forgot to tell us. In a riff on Alfred Hitchcock's To Catch a Thief, a powerful software bot is being used to defeat botnets. Carnegie Mellon spinoff For All Secures Mayhem Software won the $2 million DARPA Pentagon hacking contest last August in Vegas, according to MIT Technology Review. Mayhem is a creation of Carnegie Mellon professor David Brumley and two of his graduate students. And in the DARPA contest called the Cyber Grand Challenge, the competitors had two tasks: fix and defend assigned server software, and then hack that server code assigned to other teams. The purpose of the contest, which awarded a total of $4 million in prizes, was to encourage the automating computer security tests. And DARPA states the primary focus is its development of defensive software. And that's what we've talked about. This is, they're going to run this as a perimeter sentry on the entire Internet of Everything to be able to find, correct, and destroy if necessary without human network administrator intervention. Fresh from the BattleBot, Brumley and his company are adopting Mayhem for commercial applications, intending to find flaws in internet firmware, starting with, but not limited to, the backbone of the internet, and that is the router. In 2016, the group tested some parts of the Mayhem code with nearly 2,000 router firmware images. And firmware on a router is just like your little operating system. In the course of testing, the code found that more than 40% of all routers, guys, look at how they're going to line this up. Look at how insecure the internet is. And I mean, it probably is. People are pretty dumb about security. But I don't think the solution is letting the tempest go, making the internet enchanted. I don't think that's the solution. The code found that more than 40% of all the routers had at least one vulnerability, including 14 that had never before ever been detected and were involved in 69 separate software builds. One of the biggest challenges with internet device vulnerabilities is, of course, chasing them down, because if you have a sucky network administrator, that's what happens, and updating products from past product cycles. The promise of Mayhem is its potential to detect and repair or defend against vulnerabilities quickly, and I'm going to add in parentheses, without human intervention. One example is a botnet, which is a large number of computers or devices, often in the tens or hundreds of thousands or even millions, that are unknowingly recruited for malicious purposes by computer malware. And I don't know, we could talk about botnet attacks, but I think it's really necessary. You could get infected, not even know it, go to a website, and they could download a little Trojan that sits kind of dormant on your computer until the day that whoever it was that created that piece of malware wants to launch an attack. And then it'll wake up on your computer and use your internet connection with the millions of other people who have been infected and use that malware to attack. Bing, 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 one internet address, let's say. Let's say the attack was scheduled to take down, oh, I don't know, New York Times or something. And at, you know, midnight on March 1st, all those little botnets that everyone got infected with that they didn't know that they were infected with, wake up and I'll go attack that one website all at the same time. It's called a denial of service attack. And with that much traffic hitting a site, it can't make a connection, or no one can get there to get a connection. And so it takes the site down, in essence. So that's what a botnet attack is all about. But anyway, yes, yeah, so we could thwart botnet attacks. And each of these multitude of devices is directed to make multiple rapid requests. Yes, so denial of service. As of last October's massive denial of service attack using vulnerabilities in smart home web cameras, the need, and I don't even remember, so they were attacking home cameras, but I don't remember it ever being any big deal. So what, they took everybody's porn cam down, baby cam, I mean, I don't know what that, so what if there was, but I remember when that happened, they said, oh, look, all these cameras, this is just the tip of the iceberg for the insecure Internet of Everything. And if we don't stop it now, because all these dumb home end users don't know how to secure their devices, you know, this is going to be the end of everything in the world as we know it. So we better just launch our autonomous software to fix all that because people are too stupid. I mean, that's in essence what they are saying here. So after last October's massive denial of service attack using a vulnerability in smart home web cameras, and actually, no, I think the cameras were the host, if I'm not mistaken, for the malware, and then all the cameras turned around and attacked with a denial of service. But regardless, it was the home end user who wasn't computer savvy who was responsible for all this, they said. And it even says that here, the need for better screening and protection was underscored, double underlined, particularly in devices purchased by, quote unquote, and like I said, less knowledgeable users. So blame it all on the dumb end user. Mayhem's job, and this is Mayhem. Mayhem, the autonomous, self-aware Skynet being released into the machine, will be to find and patch immediately. So now, when a machine is compromised, it takes days or even weeks for someone to notice that we're having an issue, and then days or even weeks or maybe even never until it patches out. Imagine a world where the first time a hacker exploits a vulnerability, instantly, he'll only be able to exploit one machine, and then our super duper software will patch it and probably launch an attack, answering concerns that human security experts will still want to check the work of defensive bots. According to Brumley, even the United States government still is considering having humans in the loop. But, says Brumley, the guy who's in charge of this, he's not against it, but he still feels that humans tend to slow down the process. So, guys, they are using Mayhem. They didn't say exactly where or how or what, but they're already using it commercially. And I will guarantee you that they have let it out in little sips and slurps in the military realm. And this made me question. So we covered DARPA Dan before. DARPA Dan had all the software, and I don't remember what it was called, but it was search and destroy. It was finding human traffickers. It was finding terrorists. It was doing all this stuff. It found connections between people and mapped out endpoints that they could attack and go after. It was all on a big touchscreen display. It was pretty amazing. DARPA Dan's now over at Google, by the way. I saw this one yesterday. Add insult to injury. Guys, there's going to be nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. Not only are they going to get into our heads and our bodies, but they're going to take over the entire internet. They have some new head of the FCC coming in. We're not too sure whether or not net neutrality is going to be maintained. But don't worry about it, because it appears to me that he is on the side of the big corporations. The big corporations all got the pats on the butt a long time ago, called CYA, cover your ass, by the feds. So if they bend over and give up your search history or documentation or anything that the federal government wants to know about you, they can't be sued. So don't worry about it. It's all being done under the guise of national security. Well, it gets even better. DARPA computer simulations are now going to target social media to root out enemy disinformation and propaganda. So guys, DARPA is now getting in on the fake news search and destroy. And I'm going to put fake news in quotations, because it's not going to be CBS, NBC, and ABC that they're going after. It's going to be people like me and you. February 7th, which was just 3 days ago, 2017. U.S. military researchers are asking industry for new ways of using computer simulations to study how information spreads online via social media as a way to neutralize enemy disinformation and propaganda. Is that not crazy? Our Department of Defense is going to be focusing on Facebook. Officials in the U.S. Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, more affectionately known as DARPA, issued a solicitation on Monday, and that would be one of those RFPs. They put them out on FBO.gov. Go out there and just plug in DARPA as the search term. You will find all of their requests for proposals. They issued a solicitation this past Monday for the computational simulation of online social behavior called Social Sim. Social Sim is looking for new ways to use computer simulation to study the spread and the evolution of information in the online environment without pinpointing unique bits of information. Of course, that could compromise personal privacy. And of course, they got to put that line item in there. The ability, as long as you don't know that they're compromising your privacy, hey, I guess it doesn't matter. The ability to simulate the spread and the evolution of online information, if accurate and at scale, could enable a deeper understanding of adversaries' use of the internet, DARPA officials say. Accurate and at-scale simulations of how information spreads and evolves online would support efforts to analyze enemy strategic disinformation campaigns. I mean, listen to this. Is that us? Are we enemies? Are we now being considered enemies by the Department of Defense's Department of DARPA? Because that is sure what it sounds like to me. Enemy strategic disinformation campaigns. It'll also allow them to deliver critical information to local populations during a disaster, of course, and could potentially contribute to other cyber warfare and cyber security missions online. Social Sim seeks to develop technologies that can simulate online information spreading and evolution at scales representing target populations from thousands to tens of millions of people. Developing ways to provide supporting data to the simulation development, testing, and measurement, and develop methods and then metrics so they could build a dashboard for assessing the accuracy and the scalability of online information spread and evolution. Current computational approaches to social and behavioral simulation, ding, 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 behavioral simulation and monitoring, are currently limited, says a DARPA official, but top-down simulation models of online behavior assume uniform or mostly uniform behavior across that population, so they have a lot of trouble with people like you and me who aren't always predictable. And although this approach can scale to simulate massive populations, it can be a little bit inaccurate if there are distinct variations in the characteristics of the population. This DARPA Social Sim program has three parts: that's simulation, data provisioning, and then testing and measurement. Simulation will develop technologies that can simulate online information spread and evolution. Data provisioning will develop methods for supporting data for simulation development, and simulation testing and measurement will evaluate the accuracy and scalability of new simulation technologies. So guys, they are going to be able to build large data sets and plug them into some sort of back-end AI so they can actually figure out the best way to not only undermine and thwart information that's spreading out there, just turn it off, because information is such a threat to a population. Disinformation, oh my God. Somebody from the National Enquirer got a story out there. But they're going to be able to counter that with a flip of a switch in the most effective and efficient way possible, because they have simulated and data modeled it all. What a scary thought that is. Why is DARPA getting into social media? I just can't even believe it. And they are going to search and destroy. So where do we now end this up today? I don't know. I have so many good stories, and I'm not exactly sure where we should go. Well, you know what? Let's end it with the story that we had before this. The brain technology to merge humans and AI is already being developed. Are you scared of artificial intelligence? Well, yeah, I am kind of. Do you believe the warnings from folks like Stephen Hawking and Elon Musk and others? Is AI the greatest tool humanity will ever create? Or are we, in Elon Musk's words, quote-unquote, summoning the demon? Well, that's what I say. Well, we're not so sure. But to quote the head of AI at Singularity University, Neil Jacobstein, it is not artificial intelligence that he is worried about, but it is rather human stupidity. Dun, dun, dun. And I would almost say that, yes, that would be it. Says your brain is composed of 100 billion cells called neurons, making 100 trillion synaptic connections. And we have all kinds of human trials coming with all kinds of prostheses in the near future. They have stuff in human longevity, visual cortexes using artificial intelligence, autonomous vehicles, human biology augmentation, as well as synthetic genomics. And guys, there's some major stuff happening there. And all this stuff has been in development for a very long time, and they are getting ready to unleash it all on us, all in the name of the survival of the human race. All right, guys, have an awesome week.
Hey, this is JJ Inc., and when I'm on planet Earth,
Truth on the Tracks, you can catch every Monday night and Friday night at 9 p.m. Eastern.